A production of SDPB, South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
I'd like to call the House Local Government Committee to order. And why don't we take roll?
Representative Boland?
Here.
Cronin?
Here.
Kurd?
Here.
Bikert?
Here.
Rarics? Lederman?
Here.
Olson? Romkema?
Here.
Rounds? Solberg?
Here.
Vanderlinde?
Here.
Roush?
Here.
Kirkaby?
Here.
Quorum present.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. I'd like to welcome everybody this morning to the local government committee. I'd like to welcome all those on the internet listening in today. And a reminder in here, if you have a cell phone, make sure it's off or in silent. We have wonderful penalties for that if they go off. And we'd hate to have to have your name written on the roll for that purpose. Testifiers today, if you have handouts, I would remind you to hand those to the pages, and they will take those around for us. And with that, I think our first action, we have House Bill. Has anybody had a chance to review the minutes?
Second, Mr. Chair.
We have a motion by Rounds, second by Solberg to approve the minutes. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. First up on the agenda today was House Bill 1225, but we've had the main sponsor of that bill became ill, so we will be deferring that bill until
later date.
We will repost that. It will not be on Tuesday, probably next Thursday. So with that, we will move on to second item on the agenda, House Bill 1243. House Bill 1243, modify the requirements regarding the ownership and use of local government endowment funds. Proponents for House Bill 1243. And again, a reminder, if you're testifying today, when you come up, make sure you introduce yourself, but make sure you've also signed the sign-in sheet so we have the correct spellings and who you are with. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. My name is Noel Hamill. I'm a representative from District 20, which doesn't have anything to do with this bill, House Bill 1243. As your chairman has said, it's an act to modify the requirements regarding the ownership and use of local government endowment funds. What this bill will do is modify present statute, allow the political subdivisions a little bit more latitude when it comes to endowments and how they can deal with gifts, and I really think the bill speaks for itself. The governing body may transfer ownership of the endowment fund or transfer the custody of the assets of the fund and retain ownership of the assets of the fund. It's a bill that will be spoken to in more detail by those who will follow me in the proponent seat. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hamill. Any further proponents on House Bill 1243? Did I not see your picture in the paper today?
Mr. Chairman, I do not know what you're referring to. Can I plead the fifth here? Is that allowable, Representative?
That is allowable. I always like the smile on a charitable donor.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I contributed yesterday, probably a few years off my life. The river was chilly yesterday afternoon. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Sutton, and I'm the president of the South Dakota Community Foundation. It's been a few years since I've had a chance to come and testify, and then I come and you have a new room, so I appreciate this. Thank you. This is very nice. And Jeanette, it's good to see you again as well. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate Representative Hamill introducing this bill, and I learned a long time ago never to say this is a simple bill, but I want to give you a little bit of a scenario of what happened and how we got to this point. At the South Dakota Community Foundation, we managed just under 500 endowment funds for communities and organizations and families across the state of South Dakota. These range in size from a few thousand dollars to a few million dollars, and the total assets today are over $80 million in endowed assets or in assets where the earnings come back to benefit these charitable organizations or the charitable inclinations of the people that have developed partnerships with us. Well, we ran into a situation last year that was somewhat unique. A community, actually a county in western South Dakota, was given a gift in a will, handwritten will, lady put together, and she left a little under $1 million, right at about $1 million in a very nice estate, but she left it to the county, which is fine if you think about, well, the county's going to take the money and do things that benefit the county. What she did is she left the money. The county needed to manage the money and only spend the interest, only spend the earnings, but could not touch the principal, but to benefit three local charities, not affiliated with the county. So there was a local nursing home, there was a local cemetery, and the local senior citizen center. The county approached a local attorney who came to us and said, they'd like to just ask the South Dakota Community Foundation to take this and take it over. And we can't do that. Legislative audit, we visited with Marty Ginden at Legislative Audit, and certainly understand there's some ramifications. So we sat down first with Legislative Audit and said, let's put together a very simple bill. We've already got a statute that addresses local political subdivisions, local governmental entities, counties, cities, townships, and they can receive gifts and they can establish endowments. But what happens if they get an endowment gift that they don't want to manage for perpetuity? And it's not just certainly about the South Dakota Community Foundation. You could have someone in Aberdeen leave money to the city of Aberdeen or to the county, Brown County, and leave those dollars to benefit Northern State University forever. Just manage the funds. Well, why would they not want at least the option of going to the Northern State Foundation? Or, as I mentioned to Representative Kirkby yesterday, same thing could happen in Rapid City. Someone passes away, leaves thousands of dollars in an estate to benefit the Salvation Army, and the city of Rapid City says, we don't want to just manage this money and give away the interest forever. What this does is allow a local government subdivision to have the option to allow someone else to take ownership or manage those assets for them. And it allows for both. You can either hire someone to manage the assets for you, or you can actually give ownership to the entity who is benefiting from that, and they would still have to use those exactly as spelled out in the terms of the will or in the terms of the gift. But what this does is allow that option, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sutton. Any further proponents? House Bill 1243. Any further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to House Bill 1243? Any opponents? Seeing none, the chair will waive a rebuttal or closing comments, and we will go to committee questions. Any questions of the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Curd?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a question, but I move to pass.
Second.
We have a motion to pass by Representative Curd. We have a second by Representative Rounds. Any comments, Representative Curd?
I encourage you to vote to pass.
Words of wisdom never spoken cleaner. My comment would only be before we take the vote is that just it makes good sense. I'm glad they have caught this. I'm glad people are generous with their leftover dollars at the end of their life and would like to do good things. That makes good sense to me, and I will now ask the Secretary to call the roll. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay.
Bolin?
Aye.
Cronin?
Aye.
Curd?
Aye.
Tigard?
Aye.
Freiriggs?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Ronkema?
Aye.
Rounds?
Aye.
Solberg?
Aye.
Vanderlinde?
Aye.
Rausch?
Aye.
Kirkaby?
Aye.
15 yeas.
Second.
House Bill 1243, having received majority of the votes of the members present, is hereby declared passed. That motion to do pass. We have a motion to consent. Representative Rounds, we have a second by Mr. Curd. All those in favor of consent signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Consent. Thank you very much. Next, we will go to House Bill 1275, Authorize Electronic Bingo Devices. Proponents for House Bill 1275. Any proponents? House Bill 1275.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kirkaby.
Perhaps Representative Sola might be offering testimony elsewhere. I am not sure, but perhaps with the chair's discretion, you might be able to schedule that later on our agenda this morning.
We will do. We will defer that to the end of today's calendar. We will then proceed to House Bill 1278, an act to clarify certain statutes prohibiting political subdivisions from restricting firearms. House Bill 1278, proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee. I am Don Kopp. I represent District 35, which is East Rapid City and Rapid Valley and a portion of Box Elder. I'd first like to start out by saying you got to wonder about somebody that will jump into a river in South Dakota in the middle of February. But I guess we all have our own thing, don't we? House Bill 1278 simply clarifies the South Dakota gun carry laws, which were established in 1983, and the intent of the 1983 bill was to maintain that the bill was, or the law was uniform throughout the state. In other words, if you went from Rapid City to Pierre with a concealed weapon because you were so permitted, but you got to Pierre and they had a law in Pierre or an ordinance, or excuse me, not an ordinance, but an executive order by the mayor, for an example, that you weren't allowed to have a gun in Pierre. So you could thusly be arrested according to the issuance of that executive order by the mayor. So as what this bill does, it simply clarifies that by changing some of the words. In 1278, it says, enact to clarify the certain statutes prohibiting political subdivisions from restricting firearms, subdivisions, counties, and townships, as well as municipalities. And 8-5-13 simply says no township, and we can insert municipalities, etc., may pass any ordinance that restricts possession, transportation, sale, transfer, ownership, manufacture, or repair of firearms or ammunition or their components. And this bill would propose to change the word ordinance to read in any way restrict possession. This would circumvent the executive orders that can be issued by municipalities, townships, etc. And so it's pretty straightforward, and it's pretty easy to, I think, to get it back to what the original intent of the law was to make sure that it was uniform throughout our state. And I would appreciate a yes vote on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. Any further proponents? House Bill 1278.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the committee. I'm Zach Lautenschlager, Communications Director for South Dakota Gun Owners, primarily here to deliver approximately 820 signed petitions from some of our members. For those of you who may not be familiar with our organization, South Dakota Gun Owners is the largest gun rights organization in the state, with about 3,500 members statewide. This bill is strongly supported by our membership, as the petitions signify, and maybe if I could just have a page delivered those to you, sir. The only thing that I would add to Representative Kopp's words would be to note that in 1983, this law was, when it was originally passed, and you don't have to hand them out, you can just deliver them in a stack. Thank you very much. It's clear that the intent of this body in 1983 was to make sure that our gun laws are uniform across the state. As we look at the law, we come back and see that it refers specifically to ordinances. And we would suggest that the intent of this body in 1983 was not to leave out executive orders or any other method of dealing with these things. So we're just bringing it forward to clarify that that's the intent of this body. I would be glad to answer any questions when that would be appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lautenschlager. Any further proponents, House Bill 1278? Any further proponents? Hearing none, are there any opponents to House Bill 1278? Opponents, 1278.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Larry Nelson. I'm a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Municipal League. The proponents have told you that the statute was passed in 1983, and they're correct on that. Our position is that you really can't make it any more restrictive than what we did in 1983. But if you can make it more restrictive, perhaps you should say on line 8 after the word void, and we mean it this time. I think you meant it last time. I think you sent a clear message. I don't think there's any issues with executive orders being issued, and we think this is overkill. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Any further opponents to House Bill 1278? Any further opponents? Hearing none, I would ask Representative Kopp if he would like to have any rebuttal remarks.
Mr. Chairman, I assume it's all right if Mr. Lautenschlager sits with me. I'm not exactly sure how to answer this particular question on the this section. By this section, are null and void in line number 7. Assuming that Mr. Lautenschlager.
I will let him speak when we get into questions and answers. So if you just have any further closing comments, and we'll close the proponent testimony, and we'll get into some questions and answers.
I think, again, the word ordinance, that's the change that is being made, is will be struck, and existing restrictions are inserted. And I believe that that probably does clarify the law. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. With that, we will close proponent-opponent testimony and open it up for committee questions. Representative Bolin.
Question for either of the two proponents. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is, do we have specific examples since 1983 where executive orders were used to in any way restrict firearms, the carrying of firearms within South Dakota?
Thank you, Representative Bolin. I appreciate that question. Once again, I'm Zach Lautenschlager for the record. Yes, we do have a current example. The city of Sioux Falls has chosen to issue an executive order which outlaws firearms on city property. That has been extended to people who have concealed pistol permits. They have been told you may not carry in the parks, on the city buses, or in, for example, the Civic Center, the Sioux Falls Civic Center. So it is a live example. It exists right now. But also note that when the law specifically references ordinances, by definition, it leaves out executive orders and any kind of resolution. Those are two other ways that may be used to deal with this issue. And because it does not refer to them, it is, by definition, left out.
Mr. Question?
Please.
And that was, an executive order issued by the mayor?
That's correct.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Question.
Any further questions? Representative Rump, come on.
If we pass this, how does this affect the carrying of weapons in this Capitol building and in courthouses?
That's an excellent question. Thank you. Those two places are dealt with by state law, and under state law, it is illegal to carry in this building or in the state law gives county courthouses the jurisdiction to decide whether or not they want to outlaw it. So it does not affect those laws. Those are dealt with on the state level.
Any further questions? Representative Solberg?
I'm sorry, I'm not going to try to pronounce your last name, so just stay there. Okay, you talked about local control. Now, to me, a courthouse is a county function. So the law to prohibit firearms in a courthouse is a state law?
It is a state law, and it's an interesting law in that it works this way. The state, with this law, clearly intended to remove that jurisdiction. That's what we're discussing. In another section, it specifically grants a narrow jurisdiction to counties to restrict the possession of firearms in the courthouse if they so choose.
Any further questions? Follow-up? Representatives?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry about that. I forgot the first time. But anyhow, what about why is it to prohibit cities from having that narrow or municipalities from having that narrow authority?
That's a good question. I cannot tell you for sure that it does not. The same section, and perhaps someone can help me with that, the same section may well deal with cities and municipalities. I might be mistaken, but I am fairly confident that the city building, the city offices in Rapid City, which is my hometown, it does legally restrict the carry of firearms in that building. If we want to deal with that, I think it should be brought as part of the narrow jurisdiction that is given. I think it's fairly clear that whether or not we adopt, you know, if this legislation, I suppose if a mayor wanted to say by executive order no one can carry in the city buildings, if that's already dealt with, he could do that. But we'd suggest that's not an appropriate use of this section.
Another one, Mr. Representative Solberg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. How does this affect college campuses, dorms?
That's a good question. I thank you for that question. That's a completely separate bill that this body will obviously in the House have the opportunity to vote on that issue separately. But because we're dealing specifically with municipalities, townships, and counties, it has nothing to do with the Board of Regents or the Board of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Kurd?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Nelson, had you signed in?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask an overly broad question on purpose, and I hope you would allow Mr. Nelson some latitude in answering. The question is, I assume that I understand what you said, but you know the old axiom about what happens when you assume. So if the chair would allow some latitude, could you explain to the committee exactly what it is you object to about the way this current bill is structured?
The way the current bill is structured, we think it's designed to address a problem that does not exist. We say that we can't do it in anything in any fashion, and we think that that's very narrow. We believe that if the mayor in Rapid City or the city of Rapid City has said that on government property or city property you can't have firearms, that's appropriate. That's a local decision that has been made by the local folks, and if the people didn't like that, they could refer that decision. But most importantly, we believe that since there has not been a problem since 1983, there's no need for this legislation. My comment to you, and we mean it this time, was flippant, and I'll tell you that it was, but we mean it this time. I think you meant it the last time that you passed it. And again, we don't see the need for the legislation.
Please.
Mr. Chair, the follow-up question is, in your opinion, do you think that this bill was brought before us today specifically to address what's happened in Sioux Falls?
Mr. Chairman, I would have to speculate, and I don't know that answer, Representative Kerr.
Any further questions? Representative Bullen.
One more question from either of, for either of the proponents. Just again, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Clarification, does this bill have anything to do with public schools, specifically grades K through 12?
Thank you, that's an excellent question. Those are specifically dealt with not only in federal law, but also in state law in a completely separate section. So you have both state and federal law dealing with primary and secondary education and their facilities. So this is a completely separate issue.
And specifically, firearms are banned from those facilities.
That's
okay. Thank you.
Representative Cronin.
Did you bring this legislation in direct response to what happened in Sioux Falls? Is there some other instances where this happened?
Sure, that's a great question. Sioux Falls certainly is a leading example. However, there are other examples. The city of Rapid City has, perhaps by through an error, we're not sure. I've spoken with the people at the Civic Center, but they simply put up signs at certain places in the Civic Center saying no weapons allowed according to Civic Center policy. I've asked for the policy. The policy doesn't actually even mention weapons, so they just put up the sign, apparently without jurisdiction. That's an interesting example, and that's why we've worded it in any way restrict. And just to reiterate, I would humbly submit that it is not correct that this law is already broad. It specifically says ordinance and leaves out a few things. So there are other towns as well that we might be able to go into and look and see whether or not this is being followed. So it certainly is a statewide issue.
Any further questions from the committee? Representative Solberg.
Thank you very much. Again, the guy with the long name, sorry about this disrespect. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lautenschlager.
Thank you.
You delivered 1,200 petitions to us, as I understand. Is that right?
820, yes.
Or 820.
That's correct.
How many gun owners are there in South Dakota?
That's a great question. I don't know if anyone's ever done a survey. We do have over 40,000 concealed carry permit holders. Those are people who have applied for a concealed permit. You can assume that many of them own firearms. I think government is careful not to want to survey or register firearms, obviously. So because of that reason, there are no hard numbers, but you can be sure that many people in South Dakota own at least one firearm.
Thank you. Any further follow-up, Mr. Fuller?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you delivered 840 petitions. Mm-hmm. Is that a sign of strength or dedication?
Sure. Well, that's a great question. I suggest it is a sign of strength. When we send out letters, obviously, that's the way we distribute that petition. We mail them to our membership or to other people who are gun owners and who have expressed interest. Because of the nature of mail doesn't get opened all the time. So there are some people who didn't know that's what was in there and threw it away. So normally when we do an issue, we have around 400 petitions. For anyone who may have 400 petitions to deliver later on another issue. 820 means that people are excited, fairly excited about this.
Any further questions? Representative Kurd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one more question for Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, my question is, in the event that a mayor of a municipality or some other official that has the ability to do so signs an executive order, for instance, restricting the carry of a firearm within the city limits, how would the individual know that ordinance or executive order, not ordinance, excuse my misstatement, how would someone like me know as I traveled from city to city that executive order existed so I would not be in violation of it?
Mr. Chairman? In answer to that question, the question I would ask back to you is, how would you know that there was an ordinance or a resolution that did the same thing? And I think the answer to that is that you would inquire. As it relates to resolutions and ordinances, there's a requirement that those be published. I'm going to tell you that I don't know whether or not executive orders need to be published, but if in fact there were one issued, if you called City Hall, they would be able to tell you.
Any further questions? Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This question is for, and again, I'm sorry, Lautenschlager, okay. For some reason, I'm having a real difficult time getting my hands around the difference between a courthouse or a public facility having the right to restrict firearms in a facility and this ordinance that says how it's written. Can you in some way separate those two for us or for me specifically?
Sure. If I understand your question correctly.
Well, you had stated that this would not this law would not prohibit counties or the Capitol building or from posting right. on their doors that they will still have the ability to do as they have in the past, and I'm having trouble getting my hands around the difference between this and that.
Okay. I think I understand. Let me take a stab at it. If I don't do it correctly, please stop me and make sure I do get this right. This law was written to cover a very broad jurisdiction. Because we're dealing with a constitutional right, and there can be arguments about what a reasonable restriction is to that right, this law, we believe, was passed so that this body would deal with those questions. And the jurisdiction would flow from there to the lower jurisdictions, counties, for example, or townships or cities. The method that was chosen was to lay down a broad definition of how the jurisdictional flow would be. And that would be this body retains this jurisdiction to pass any restrictions throughout the state. No other jurisdiction in this state has that jurisdiction. Then we dealt with in another section, there were members who felt it shouldn't be legal here, members who felt it shouldn't be legal in county courthouses. If we're talking about a library, that would be another public building, or the civic center, those are getting further and further out. We're not familiar with any good arguments for why you should be unable to defend yourself in a library any more than in your home or in the grocery store. To be honest, in towns all across South Dakota, concealed carry is legal there. And unless they figured out how to do it by executive order or resolution, and were inclined to do so, there has been no effort tried for about 20 or 30 years now. The cities have just decided, well, I guess that's outside our jurisdiction. Unfortunately, now it's been discovered that there's a loophole here. We have the executive order option. Well, we're here to suggest that if an ordinance is not proper, then neither is an executive order. If we're not going to tighten it up, then it really doesn't have an effect. So have I answered your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Any further questions? Representative Rollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been doing a little digging here in regards, and I don't know how to direct or who to direct this to, probably Mr. Nelson. 2214.22 deals with the definition of a county courthouse. The definition for the purposes of these chapters, the term county courthouse means a state capitol or any building occupied for the public sessions of a circuit court. with its various offices. The term includes any building appended to or used as a supplementary structure to a county courthouse. That being the definition, a magistrate court would not fall under the auspices of a courthouse, county courthouse.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. If it does not, it should.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Hearing none, we'll close the question portion. We'll go to committee discussion and or action. Representative Olson. We have motion do pass. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second from Representative Lederman. Any discussion? Representative Olson.
It looks to me like this is just cleaning up something, and it's helping guarantee a guarantee that is already written in the United States Constitution. It specifically states that we have the right to keep and bear arms, period. And nothing in this conflicts with either federal law or state law, and I think we should go with it.
Any further comments? Representative Lederman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What this bill does is it protects our Second Amendment rights from any encumbrances. What we've heard today is some good testimony, and I appreciate the input from all the proponents and opponents, but we have to remember that we have the right to bear arms regardless of any conditions, whether they be set on us in an ordinance or posting of a sign in any establishment that a city wants to dictate. We have to protect our rights, and this bill is very important in doing that, and I urge everyone here to vote yay on this bill. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Comments? Representative?
I'm going to vote against this. I don't think that guns have any place in schools, campuses, or an executive order. That means you're superseding the power of the mayor. You're superseding other people's power, and I just am going to vote for it. I'm still not clear about it.
Thank you. I'm going to vote against it. Thank you. Any further comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with the original intent of the language of this piece of legislation. That being said, we have areas that we may have to look at in future legislatures in regards to certain municipal buildings, in regards to magistrate court or other areas where hearings are held on a more local level. As we've all seen over the years where we've had these situations pop up in a courthouse where somebody takes out a firearm and uses it in a situation where they have a hot and heavy debate or a legal issue going on. The intent of this bill, I think, it just cleans it up or satisfies in any way restrict possession. I think just cleans up and forces what the original intent was. But I think we're going to have to look at another way to maybe include some terminology to include municipalities in the line of an area where they'll have a magistrate court, include that under the definition of a courthouse or do another chapter. But I think that would be another subject. I would ask that we move this bill along, and maybe along the way we can add some language to clarify. But I would urge due pass at this time. Thank you.
Any further comments? Representative Curd.
Mr. Chair, a substitute motion.
State your motion.
Motion is we move this bill to the 41st day.
Second.
We have a motion by Representative Curd and a second by Representative Cronin to move to the 41st day. Comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm concerned about the potential ability of a mayor and a municipality writing an overly broad executive order that would restrict the intent of what I believe our concealed carry law is in the state of South Dakota, and that concerns me. But I also like the idea of the same official making a rational decision about where a firearm may be significantly dangerous in his or her community. And I don't think that we have adequately addressed either of those two concerns with this bill as it appears before us today.
Thank you. Any further comments? Hearing none, before we take the vote, As I look at this bill, I'm questioning its necessity, and as I'm reading it, I'm questioning that it's actually clearing anything up. I do think it is the right of being a mayor of a town in a former life of mine, to be able to have the authority of our council or myself be, when we're making the decisions for the greater good of the people we serve, to have one individual's rights trump all of that, to me just seems not adequate. I think that's part of the reason that we're here representing the people we do on a state level, that the county commission is there representing the people they represent, that the city councils are there and the township boards are there, and they should have some authority to do what they think's best in the people they represent. So I am going to support this motion, and all those in favor of the motion will vote aye, those opposed nay, and the secretary will call the roll.
Boland?
Nay.
Cronin?
Aye.
Bird?
Aye.
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 And one excused.
A motion to send House Bill 1278, having not received a majority of the votes, is hereby lost. We are back to the motion of House Bill 1278 do pass. Any comments?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me that if you look at the bill that was passed in 1983, or you look at these changes here, this really is a cleanup bill. It plugs a loophole. It takes authority. It restricts possible authority that a mayor might have. It seems to me that the clear intent of the law passed in 1983 was to remove this type of jurisdiction from local government and keep it with the state. This only clarifies it. That's why I support a due passage on this bill. Thank you very much.
Any further comments? Representative Solberg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm going to oppose this bill, and simply because I can't imagine going to the Sioux Falls Arena where they serve alcohol for a concert and allow concealed weapons on the inside of that. I think that common sense has to prevail in some of these, and I just feel that we're taking away local control, which we hear so much about, and I'm going to oppose the bill based on that.
Any further comments? Representative Olson.
I would strongly suggest that there's no more control, local control, that this is local control on the individual basis. By not passing this, we have allowed the mayors in some of these towns by executive order to take away my constitutional right that to keep and bear arms. And I would point out that Washington, D.C., where my sister lived for several years, was a gun-free zone, the whole town, all of Washington, D.C. The Supreme Court ruled that they did not have the authority to make it a gun-free zone, and now you can keep and bear arms in Washington, D.C. I don't see that this is any different, and I will definitely be going for this bill.
Thank you, Representative Kurd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I remain conflicted on this issue here. I'm concerned about an elected official in an area exerting overly broad authority through an executive order and restricting an individual's right to carry a weapon, as Ms. Olson has previously described. However, I also believe that there may be very good indications and circumstances in which such authority for a very specific purpose should still be allowed, similar to what my colleague from Sioux Falls has mentioned earlier.
Thank you. Any further comments? Hearing none, I just find it interesting that we have a bill before us. We have so many petitions, and we have so little proponents for the change. I would think that if there had been some serious problems with this and many violations of it, that we'd have quite a few gun owners up here in our presence testifying. But with that, the motion before us is do pass motion on 1278. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. The secretary will call the roll.
Aye.
No.
No.
Aye.
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 Nay.
Nay.
Seven yeas, one, two, three, four, five nays, and one excused.
House Bill 1278, having received majority of the votes of the members present, is hereby passed. Thank you all. I see Representative Solem is in the room, so we will go take up House Bill 1275. Before we do hear the proponent testimony of that, we do have two pages in the room. If they would first come to the mic and introduce themselves, or pages, before she takes off. Our pages work so hard for us all session. They are here for a couple of weeks, and we'd like to have them introduce themselves and tell us where you are from.
Hello, I'm Anna. I'm from Rapid City.
And I'm Angela from Sioux Falls.
Thank you very much, and thank you for what you do. Okay, with that, we will now go to proponent testimony on House Bill 1275. Representative Solem.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Representative Solem, District 5, Watertown. I apologize for the delay, but I thought I'd talk to Representative Kirkby and asked that this testimony be delayed until next Tuesday, February 17th, due to the fact that I do not have any proponents here to testify. They were unavailable today. And so we met, a couple days ago and asked if he would swap that on his schedule.
If there's no objection from the committee, I guess we would honor that and add that to Tuesday's calendar. We got a pretty full calendar on Tuesday, so testimony may be limited.
This shouldn't take long.
Okay. Hearing no objection to that, then we will do that. We will defer proponent and opponent testimony till Tuesday.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
Thank you, Representative Solem. Could be busy. On my sheet, that brings us to House Bill 1296. And that is the last bill today on my list. And if I am not mistaken, and maybe Representative Fargan can clear me up, is that not everyone is here to testify?
Yes, yes.
So what we will do is open. We will have opponent proponents that are here, and then we will also defer that. I do not think we can do it Tuesday, probably Thursday of next week.
Thursday? I was hoping it would be Tuesday. At least that's why I know everybody can make it.
How's our Tuesday calendar looking?
Full.
Has that been posted already?
No, it hasn't. This is just a preliminary.
So we can actually, okay. I think we can do that. We can do Tuesday. So with that, we will open proponent testimony on House Bill 1296. Representative Fargan.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman and the committee. My name is Mitch Fargan. I'm a state representative from District 8. I'm going to keep this very short and sweet today because, like was previously said, we will be having other proponents coming on Tuesday to testify in front of you. Also, I think there's an opponent on the DMV will be coming out, or won't be able to testify today also, so that she's already notified that this will be on Tuesday, so she'll be able to participate then. This bill is pretty straightforward. I guess what it does, an act to make the use of tribal ID cards equal to certain state-issued documents for ID purposes only. So a tribal ID card, what that is, it means an unexpired ID card issued by the South Dakota tribal government of the tribe that is recognized by the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the U.S. Department of Interior that contains the legal name, date of birth, signature, and the picture of the enrolled tribal member. So it's pretty straightforward. What I'm asking, I'm hoping that we can have these tribal ID cards be the same as South Dakota State issue non-driver license and driver's license for ID purposes only. It's pretty straightforward, and like I said, we'll have more proponents about examples of what goes on and some other things with those guys are probably my experts in this field. I'll be waiting for questions today and also on Tuesday when we have it there. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any further proponents? 1296, any other proponents here today? Hearing none, is there any opponents to 1296 today? This might go pretty quick. Is there any questions of the committee for Representative Fargan today? Representative Rounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know we are going to be holding this bill over, and I thought maybe I could get a question in that we can have answered during the testimony during the following weeks.
Please.
Thank you. Would this card under this bill be used as identification when approaching the county or the state and getting your driver or your automobile registration renewed?
Mr. Chairman. Yes, as of right now, that's how it's written, and that's going to be one of the opponents to this bill also. I'm going to be sitting down talking to the people I wrote the bill for, my constituents, talking to them about changing that possibly, because I know the DMV is opposed to that, and I'm willing to work with them and willing to work with my constituents on that bill.
Thank you.
Yep.
Representative Kurd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Representative Fargan as well. I've never had the occasion to interact with any sort or form of tribal identification card. I'm completely unfamiliar with them. If possible, when we consider action on this, if you could have an example, I think that would be helpful for me. And the second question that you could maybe address at that setting is many of our state-issued IDs, in fact, all of them that I'm aware of, have significant anti-fraud and anti-tamper technology built into them. So if those IDs have the same mechanisms, I think it'd be terrific for the committee to hear about how we know that they aren't fraudulently obtained, even though I understand the statute has provisions for using one in a fraudulent fashion. I think it would help to know that there is some security component to those kind of IDs.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I will have a tribal ID passed around probably with the gentleman and coming to testify on Tuesday. So thank you.
Yeah, Representative.
Could you give us an example as to why this legislation being brought forward?
I cannot, but I'm sure on Tuesday that my constituents will be able to. They'll give you multiple examples on Tuesday.
Before we take any further questions, I see Senator Bradford came into the room. We're a little unorthodox here. We've taken some proponents, some opponents. We're going to defer the bill until Tuesday. But if you have some proponent testimony to this, we would listen to that at this time if you would like.
Senator Bradford, District 27. I'm not sure what we're doing here, because I thought I passed the tribal ID bill already. There's one in state law right now. The Senator Dick Hagan started it, and he passed away and before it was completed, and I picked it up and we passed it. The problem that I've run into now and in the past, the state okayed the tribal ID bill as long as the bill duplicated the driver's license. In other words, it was an untamperable item. We had, according to what they told me, that only one tribe had completed that process, and that was the Cheyenne River. And so I can give you a lot of points to have it, because we do need it, because some people down there never get a driver's license. They don't, the older people especially. And as you all know, nowadays they want a couple forms of ID to do almost anything. So that was usually their second form of ID, and sometimes it might be the only one. And it was being, if they went in to get the driver's license, for instance, right now, until this new federal law comes in, right now, if they go to get a driver's license, they take their ID, tribal ID with them, they will use that to allow them to apply for a state driver's license. The problem is that our people think that we as state legislators have power over the public sector. And you see, if you take that same tribal ID into Walmart, they'll say, no, I won't take it. I won't cash your check with that. And you understand that we have no power to obligate. Even if you pass this bill, that is still not going to make anyone who runs a private business have to take that for an identification for some things. What it does, it will allow you in any state thing. For instance, if you went down to get maybe a birth certificate or maybe something from the state, you could use it there, and you could use it. And some of them use the one right now. It's being done. But the problem here is, and I thought maybe this bill was going to do that, we had to do something to get it included in the federal ID, because the state told me that as soon as this bill passes, that tribal IDs are not included in this federal ID thing. And she came and apologized to me that they were going to no longer be able to use them. So it would be good before you have any action if we could look into that. I think that's a good idea that you're moving it. And I'm definitely for it. I mean, I'm a proponent. I just want the thing to work with the federal law, too. That's the thing. And I don't know if the state has testified as an opponent. Have they?
No opponent testimony at this time.
Okay. Well, I think maybe some of that is that the feds aren't going to recognize it anyway. So I think we need to have their input. So I appreciate the fact you're going to postpone it until next week. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Kurd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a suggestion, since we're in kind of freewheeling format here a little bit. Sounds like my interpretation of what the Senator said is that we've already established that the tribal ID can be used in our local and state government for identification purposes, but the problem is that in the private sector it's not always recognized. And his further concern being that this will not be an accepted form of identification when the new federal statute goes into effect. So I'm going to offer a friendly suggestion, hopefully it's taken as friendly, that Representative Fargan get together with the state and make sure that we get an amendment before us when the committee meets again that makes sure that the ID fulfills the federal requirements that are coming. That's really the true intent and the concern, it sounds like to me.
Thank you for that suggestion. Any other questions at this point? If not, we will defer continuing proponent and opponent and questions until Tuesday. With that, I think that's the bottom of my calendar. Is there anything else to come before the committee? Representative Rounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Coming into today, I looked at the number of bills we had, and I thought we'd be here till 12:30. And under your guidance, we're going to be out here at 11 o'clock today. And I would like to thank you on behalf of the committee to, as you move things along. Thank you.
Make sure you pass that on to the chair of the committee when he returns. Representative Kurd.
I always wanted to comment that your dilection was impeccable today and far superior to our normal chair, so done a fantastic job.
I do believe that's on the internet for him to listen to at his pleasure.
Well, he enjoys a good joke, so I found that he'd find that humorous as well.
Hearing no further action, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. If all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned.